Hi there, my name's Aiden, and welcome back to the Skyfall F1 podcast. And whew, it's okay, you can breathe now. The race is over, we can all relax for about 4 days until the next Grand Prix weekend starts. The Australian Grand Prix, as a Formula One fan, had about everything that you could have wanted. Obviously, for certain teams, it could have gone a bit better in some areas, but you know, that's just how the cookie crumbles sometimes. As a fan of the sport, you had to enjoy that race. Six total drivers DNFing, just overall chaos. How many safety cars do we have? Do we have four different safety cars plus an aborted start at the start of the race? It literally had everything. What a way to start this season as we come to the close of these regulations. We've been anticipating this for months now, preparing for what could be the closest season ever in Formula One. And now we've got an example of just how chaotic it can be with some of the factors that are coming into play this season. So I'm going to break down this Grand Prix weekend. So how these Grand Prix recaps are going to work, I'm going to break down the free practice sessions, qualifying, and then I'm going to go through a breakdown of the race. And after that, I'm going to give my three key takeaways from the weekend and provide a bit of a preview for the next race. So starting off with free practice. So an important note, since this is my first Grand Prix recap of the season, do not take too much out of free practice, especially FP1 and FP2 fastest laps. Those are not going to be indicative of much in the grand scheme of things. FP1 is generally for setting up the car, FP2 is for long race pace simulations, and FP3 is generally when you get into qualifying simulations. FP3 fastest laps are more noteworthy than the other two because they're generally quali sims. However, drivers have more of a chance to make a mistake over the smaller sample size in qualifying sessions versus the extended runs of FP3, so there's still a pretty good chance that the actual grid order is going to shake out a bit differently than FP3 appears. So, in FP2, we discovered that hards seemed to be the best race tire in dry conditions, softs were falling off really quickly. McLaren and Ferrari seemed to have the fastest cars in the race simulations, but Ferrari's pacing seemed to have much higher variability in terms of like the consistency of their lap times. McLaren was a bit slower, but also were right there every single lap. Ferrari had some laps that were faster than McLaren, but they also had some laps that were significantly slower, so it seemed like they were struggling to control their tire degradation, control their lines through certain places. It was definitely some very interesting data that is going to be more important as we move forward in drier conditions than what we got this weekend. In FP3, we saw the battle for pole, which seems to have six contenders going into Saturday, the McLarens and the Ferraris, plus Max Verstappen and George Russell. And realistically, all six appeared to have a shot. They were all within a couple hundredths of a second on their fastest laps. So it was definitely going to be interesting going into Saturday afternoon, see who put it on pole. And boy, how wrong we were about how close it was going to be up top. So before I get to that, let's talk about Q1. Ollie Bearman doesn't set a time. He obviously crashed in free practice, and it's just an unfortunate crash for Bearman. You know, he's already participated in three Grand Prix weekends. He was the most experienced of the drivers who were classified as rookies this season, but he just had a crash. FP3, he beached in the gravel, so he got almost zero runtime over the course of three practice sessions. And then he was unable to set a time in Q1 due to a gearbox issue that was left over likely from the crash in FP1. Also out in Q1 were Kimi Antonelli and Liam Lawson, both driving in cars that were projected to be in the top eight. Now, Antonelli seemed to be struggling with something. He had some damage from hopping over curbs, and that was actually causing him to lose 0.4 of a second per straight, which completely killed any chance of him putting in a solid lap. Lawson, I really don't have much of an explanation for. He just never seemed to get the car under control. His tires must have been going away very fast because he couldn't even get through the last sector in his second flying lap, and that knocked him out of the session completely. He never had a shot to get that flying lap in to get him into Q2. The other noteworthy thing was Gabriel Bortoleto in his maiden qualifying session out-qualifying Nico Hülkenberg, who is a very good qualifier in his own right. Nico Hülkenberg, of course, out in Q1. Bortoleto onto Q2. In Q2, Bortoleto nearly spun it into the barrier, but made an excellent save. Obviously, he was still eliminated in Q2, but as the commentators pointed out during the session, it was important for him to keep that out of the wall, simply so they didn't have to waste the time and money and resources to rebuild the car itself going into Sunday and potentially Brake Parc Fermé, which would kill his qualifying position anyway. So it was a good job by him to keep it out of the barrier. Unfortunately, didn't have the pace to get into Q3. In Q2 as well, Lewis Hamilton spun out and complained about drivability in his Ferrari. Over the course of his several laps, he did make it out. However, the same cannot be said for Jack Doohan, who was not only compromised by Hamilton's spin, which ended up deleting his lap time anyway, but he also was impeded several times in the third sector, which meant he was 7/10 off of Hamilton trying to make it through. And it's just unfortunate for Doohan. Home qualifying session, he seemed like he had the pace based off of Q1 and his first run in Q2, but then never got a chance to show it because of the amount of traffic there was. So, making it through to Q3, seven different teams had drivers in. The only three teams that didn't make it into Q3 were Haas, Sauber, and Aston Martin. So once we hit Q3, it became clear that the McLarens were completely untouchable. They struggled on their first flying laps. They were in P4 and P10 after the first runs, and then after the second runs, they were 4/10 up on everybody else. Norris took pole by almost 5/10 of a second, which is just blisteringly quick compared to what we had seen from McLaren earlier in the weekend. Piastri was right behind him a couple hundreds off, and then Verstappen was a world behind. However, it was still surprising for Verstappen to even be where he was, given Verstappen himself was not expecting to be competing even for a podium in Australia heading into the weekend, and now he's starting from P3, so a pretty solid starting spot for him. Obviously, there were crazier surprises than Verstappen in P3, as Yuki Tsunoda and Alex Albon qualified P5 and P6 for Racing Bulls and Williams, and this is exactly what I wanted to see going into this season. Obviously, we were set up by an excellent 2024 season. We weren't sure what we were going to get heading into 2025, and now we've seen exactly what I wanted to see. We have seen teams competing, and we have seen drivers able to overdrive their car and get it even higher than we may have ever expected. So props to both of those drivers for their positions in qualifying. Obviously, they diverged in different paths in the final race classification. We'll get to that in a minute, but props to both of them. And it seems like we're going to be in for some very surprising results over the course of the season in qualifying. So, with Tsunoda and Albon in P5 and P6, obviously at least one of the top teams had to fall off a bit, and that team was Ferrari. Ferrari qualified P7 and P8, taking up the fourth row, and it was worrying to a lot of people, including me initially. I was quite surprised to see the Ferraris that low, but then you start looking at the way they set up their car, and it was clearly set up for the race. We were expecting pretty heavy rain throughout Sunday, and you could tell that Ferrari was setting it up for a rainy weekend, not a dry one. So now we get into the race, and before we even start, Isaac Hadjar is into the barriers. Coming out of the exit of Turn 2, just could not find the grip on a very greasy Albert Park circuit, sent it in the barriers, broken rear wing, out of the race. That is the second wet race in a row where we have had a car out on the formation lap. It's just unfortunate for Hadjar. I mean, debut race, he qualified P11, a pretty solid starting position, and then just heartbreaking stuff. What I would like to call out is Lewis Hamilton's father, Anthony. Huge props to him for consoling Hadjar after the fact. I mean, absolute class move. Really respect him a lot after that. And for Hadjar himself, I mean, it's a rookie mistake. He's going to bounce back from it. It's his first race weekend in Formula One, his first wet session in Formula One, period. So things like that are going to happen. Obviously, it's unfortunate to happen that early on, but he'll learn. So, aboard his start occurs. We get to the first lap, and we've already got another car out, not even halfway through. Still in Sector 1, Jack Doohan goes out. He loses it on one of the white lines, which Albert Park is a street circuit, so there are street pavings, or there are street lines paved into the circuit. And those lines ended up causing a lot of issues over the course of the race, as we will talk about later as well. Doohan, unfortunately, was the first victim of one of those white lines, as he ended up in the barriers. Unfortunate for him, but he was not the only car to go out on the first racing lap. Under safety car conditions coming out of turn 14, Carlos Sainz ended up in the barriers in his Williams debut. Now, this was a very, very confusing collision for me to witness. It's very hard to tell, and there's yet to be a conclusion over whether this was a mechanical issue in his Williams or just a driver error. Sainz complained about a heavy spike in power when he put his foot down on the throttle, so it may have been just overapplication. It also may have been a power issue in the Williams itself. Either way, Sainz is now out of the race, and we have to wait to collect his car as well as Doohan's. So the safety car comes in, and the drivers start to settle in on a wet track. Oscar Piastri begins to pressure Lando Norris, gets to about 8 tenths behind him, and then is told to hold position by his race engineer, Tom Stallard. So that's a very confusing situation to me. I'll cover that a bit later in one of my key takeaways, but it was a very strange thing to say when he gets within a second and then he falls back off Lando and then he's told he's free to race. Very strange situation, and like I said, I'll talk about that a bit more later. Even with the team orders going on, the McLarens are now running away from everybody, with Verstappen about 14 seconds back, and the race is starting to get boring until Fernando Alonso finds the barriers. Now, at first glance, this may seem like a very strange mistake from Fernando Alonso. I mean, when I first watched this, I was like, are we sure that was Alonso driving that car? Are we sure that wasn't Lance Stroll putting it in the barriers, as we've seen so often in these kind of wet races? But no, it was Alonso, and it was very weird to see until you realize he's struggling from the same thing that caused Doohan to crash. He gets on the white lines, he gets off of the already slick tarmac and onto the even slicker line, and that just kills him. There was also what he had noted was some gravel on the track around turn six, which, great job, F1, putting a gravel trap in a spot where several drivers crashed in 2024. You know, that was a really, really smart decision. I think it was really helpful to see in qualifying when several laps got ruined by that gravel trap, and then in the race when the gravel spewed out of it and it caused Alonso's race to end. You know, just real class act from F1 right there. I'm not frustrated at all. So now, with Alonso out, safety car has returned to the track again. Bert Meinlander really getting in his miles this weekend, and everybody is swapping to dry tires. Most runners are on the hard tires, although a couple are on the mediums, notably Max Verstappen, begins putting pressure on Lando Norris. Now, there's a lot of debate on the radios regarding the weather, and there's a constantly changing amount and location. At first, they're told it's just a small amount of rain, only hitting Sector 3. Then they're told more rain, but still just on Sector 3, and now it's probably going to be pouring everywhere, and nobody knows what's going on. And obviously, all the drivers are asking at this point, hey, can I get a confident yes or no? What is going to be happening here? Especially Lando, likely getting some flashbacks to Sochi 2021. He's ready to jump on those inters in a moment's notice. But Will Joseph, his race engineer, basically says, we can't give you any confidence. It's hard to know. And this is a stark reminder that sometimes teams won't know until it's too late when it comes to the weather. And obviously, Melbourne's going to be a bit more volatile because it's a coastal city, and that's going to affect the wind patterns and some of the weather in the area. But this was the same thing that happened in São Paulo. McLaren pitted Lando and Mercedes pitted George Russell, and they both got caught out because the rain got so bad that they were forced to red flag the race. Obviously, they have all of the computers in the world that are going to try to tell you the weather, but to an extent, there's only so much that those computers can do. So the rain starts falling, and suddenly you're fortunate to even keep the car going in the right direction. Both McLarens go off, Norris gets off virtually scot-free, and Piastri ends up not so fortunate. He is stranded in the wet grass, and he looks like he's beached at first, and it's so bad that the graphic was already updated to say he was out of the race. But then the camera cuts back to the final turn of the circuit, and you can see him slowly reversing onto the escape road. He gets on tarmac, and he gets the car back in the right direction. Wow. I'm in awe of the willpower it took him to get back on the track. There are so many drivers that would have just spun their tires around for a moment, said, I'm stuck, and gotten out of the car. Oscar refused to do so, and he was acknowledged accordingly by the fans. Big props to the fans in that area for giving him a standing ovation when he eventually got out. And yeah, just great job by Oscar. Obviously, that completely ruined any chance of him having a good race, but he still was able to claw up P9, as we'll talk about in a bit. Excellent recovery drive from him there. And you know, there have been a couple of people that I've been seeing online that are saying stuff along the lines of, the championship could come down to those 2 points. That's how close it could be between Oscar and Lando this year, and I completely agree. They need both drivers need to maximize every single point opportunity that they get so that they can go win the championship. Oscar had an unfortunate mistake, and he went out after that mistake and maximized his points. Kudos to him. Kudos to Lando as well. Obviously, maximized his points by winning the race, but again, we'll get to that later. So, outside of the McLarens, there are a couple other drivers that are like, nah, we're good. We don't need intermediates. I know everybody else is going off, but we're fine. We're better than them. Max Verstappen, one of those drivers who, yeah, you can make that argument. He gambles an extra lap on slicks, actually, two extra laps, stays on the track for both of them, but ends up losing out to Lando in the pit stop. Everybody on the track is now pitted, except for the Ferraris, Yuki Tsunoda, and Liam Lawson. Guess who's struggling in the wet weather now? Charles Leclerc spins in the final sector. Tsunoda laughs at him as he drives past and then proceeds to drive into the grass in the final sector as well. And then Liam Lawson, soon after, crashes into the wall, as well as Gabriel Bortoleto, just within a couple seconds of each other. Obviously, both unfortunate crashes. Lawson just hung out to dry by his team. Unfortunately, it's hard to hang something out to dry when it's pouring down rain outside, and he ends up paying the price for it. Bortoleto's crash was very strange, obviously. Another rookie in his debut, unfortunate to see him crash out in the way he did, especially after how promising his weekend looked and how promising his teammates' weekend turned out to be. So, unfortunate to see him go out the way that he did. But, quick note, why did his wheel just pop off of the car? If you watch the replay closely, Gabriel Bortoleto's right rear wheel just comes undone. Like, it doesn't clip the barrier, it doesn't clip anything on the track, at least as far as we can tell. It just kind of comes off the car. And you gotta wonder, was it a suspension issue that was already there from something else that causes him to crash out there? So, just very puzzling situation altogether, and a very unfortunate one for Bortoleto himself. Now, with Lawson and Bortoleto both in the barriers, the safety car has to come back out again. Just like I said, Burt Mylander getting his mileage in this weekend, and the inners are completely necessary. Or are they? Because the Ferraris are 1-2, and Tsunoda's a P4. They can just keep it on track. They're set up for a huge point haul when it comes down to the end of the race, and this gamble could cause them to turn this weekend that seemed so just bad from the start and turn it into a 1-2, is what I would say if the three cars that I just mentioned didn't immediately pit under the safety car. Like, it was a bad strategy call, 100%. But you've made the bad strategy call already. I mean, sunk cost fallacy be darned right now. You already committed to the bit. Like, you've already stayed out on the dry tires. Why would you now admit defeat by putting on the wet tires and killing any chance you had of bringing in any kind of points? That pushed the Ferraris down to P9 and P10, pushed Tsunoda down to P11, where he'd end up falling to P12. I mean, it just killed these guys' races. I don't understand the move to bring them back in. Obviously, it was a gamble to leave them out in the first place. I can totally appreciate that. You were trying to make something out of nothing. Or in Tsunoda's case, you were trying to do a little bit too much, but that's besides the point. I can sort of understand the reasoning behind leaving them out. I cannot justify the reasoning of bringing them in whatsoever. It was so frustrating to see as somebody who is a Yuki Tsunoda fan. Man, that one hurt. So now, with those cars down the order, safety car has come back in with just a couple racing laps to go, and we are in dry enough conditions for DRS. So again, this is super frustrating to see as a fan of Yuki, and I'm sure it's super frustrating for all the Ferrari fans out there as well. Now the DRS is open, and you know who's within DRS range? Oscar Piastri, chasing down the drivers in front of him. He's helped out a bit by a mistake from Pierre Gasly, who cost himself several points with a mistake into turn one. That allows the two Ferraris pass. That eventually allows Oscar past. And Oscar, in fact, gets past Lewis Hamilton with a stellar move through turn nine on the final lap. That was a ridiculous move from Oscar. Just balls to the wall, throws it around the outside of Hamilton, and then fends him off into the next apex. Bravo by Oscar. Yes, Hamilton had suffered some damage from the collision with his teammate, who, welcome to Ferrari, Lewis. I'm just going to bang into your right front wing, but whatever. But Lewis is struggling a bit for grip, yes, but it's still a very daring move from Oscar, and I'm actually very impressed with the amount of space Hamilton gave him, given how little grip he had. He managed to keep it on the track and keep it out of the McLaren at the same time. So kudos to him, and bravo to Oscar for a great move to get another point back. Also within DRS range was Kimi Antonelli, who, by the way, has been running in P5 after being knocked out in Q1. What an excellent debut for Antonelli. He makes it better by passing Alex Albon. It's made worse by a penalty that he takes for an unsafe release early in the race, and then it's rectified by that penalty being removed after the fact. He ends up classifying P4. Excellent debut for Antonelli. Excellent race overall to get all the way up to P4. And props to Albon as well. Qualified P6. Ended up staying right there the entire race. He was never lower than P8 outside of pit phases. So just really impressive from Albon. He ends up bringing in 10 points for Williams. That is their best performance in an individual race in 7 years. Enjoy it while it lasts, Williams guys. We also received a final bout of excitement from the leading pair in the race. Lando Norris controlled this race the entire way, and Max Verstappen decided with 2 laps to go, he was going to do exactly what Lando did in Imola in 2024 and put a lot of undue stress on Lando, despite him seeming to think the race was won at that point. Lando either made a mistake or Max started pushing ridiculously hard, but suddenly Max is under a second with 2 laps to go, and there are 4 DRS straights around Albert Park. You can see where this is going. Verstappen gets the gap all the way down to 3/10, heading on to the final DRS straight, unable to make the move. Now he's got DRS down the pit straight, and his back end twitches and coming out of turn 2, and that kills any opportunity he may have had on the remainder of the final lap. Lando holds on under pressure to win the Australian Grand Prix. Verstappen settles for second, and George Russell is on the podium. Can we just talk about it for a second? Whenever something is chaotic, whenever something seems to go wrong, why is it always George Russell there? The last example, obviously, was Sao Paulo, and he would have been there if his team hadn't screwed him out of it. But you also had Austria, where he took a race win because Lando and Max decided to play bumper cars at the front of the field with just a couple laps to go. Russell just seems to be in the right place at the right time a lot of times, but you gotta be in it to win it, I guess, so props to him for that. As I said earlier, Antonelli right behind his teammate in P4, Albon P5 for Williams, and right behind them, Lance Stroll. Remember how I mentioned earlier, I would have expected to see him in the barriers instead of his teammate? He somehow manages to bring 8 points home for Aston Martin. Props to him. Great race by Lance Stroll. Maybe this is a sign of him turning things around. I'd love to see it. I'd love to see him turn into a solid driver and not just be a guy taking up space on the grid. That would be excellent for the future. Right behind him, Nico Hülkenberg pulls in P7 for Sauber, outscoring the entirety of their 2024 efforts in a single weekend. That's just Hulk, baby. That's just what he does at this point in his career. He takes tractors, he puts them in the point. Yes, there's a lot of circumstances that put him in there that were completely out of his control. Hey, gotta be in it to win it, and he gets P7 for his efforts. Bravo, Nico Hülkenberg. As I said before, Piastri pipped Hamilton on the final lap. Ferrari took just 5 points total from the weekend as Leclerc finished P8, Hamilton P10. They are behind Sauber going into China. What is going on in F1 right now? It's the runner-up in the Constructors' Championship in 2024 is behind the team that didn't score until the second-to-last round in 2024. This is the most insane timeline we could have had, and I am 100% here for it if we can keep this going for a full season. Just please don't turn into McLaren dominance. I'm begging you, F1. So that's it for the race recap itself. Now it's time for my key takeaways from the race weekend. Number one, strategy plays a massive role, and it always has. We just don't talk about it enough. Yes, your car has to have good pace. Yes, your driver has to be able to handle that pace and deliver lap after lap. But holy crap, if I see another team bottle a huge opportunity with strategy calls, I might lose my mind. Ferrari are the biggest culprits of this. They cost Charles a home win in Monaco 2022 and may have cost him the championship by giving Max all of the momentum coming into the second half of the season. Last season as well in Canada, they screwed Charles out of any chance to do anything with his race. by putting him on hards when the rest of the grid were on intermediates. They did it again in Australia this year. They keep putting the wrong compound of tire on at the wrong time, and it keeps killing their races. I don't know how you haven't learned at this point. Sometimes being different doesn't make you right. And it's so frustrating to see these two very talented drivers, Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz last year, and now Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton this year, get completely screwed out of any chance of putting together a solid race by their team. You're supposed to help them, not hurt them. I don't know who hasn't explained this to you. Your job is to give them the best opportunity to win. And oh boy, the same goes for you, RB. The amount of times in 2024 that Racing Bull screwed both Yuki Tsunoda and Daniel Ricciardo, and at times Liam Lawson, out of huge point scoring opportunities was ridiculous. You had so many different strategies where you're putting Daniel on a three stop for God knows why when he's just trying to make up positions in his final race. You put Yuki on new intermediate tires and screw his race over when he could have been in line for a podium in Brazil, when he would have been leading the race if he had stayed out on those old intermediate tires ahead of Ocon and Gasly, and probably would have finished P2 or at least P3. So you ruin that opportunity. And now again, you leave him out this time on slick tires in rainy conditions, and you throw away any chance at big points in the season opener. Tsunoda could have got at least P6, if not P5 in that race, and you threw it away completely. This is so frustrating as a fan. Even just as an F1 fan in general, you don't want to see this. Nobody wants to see this. We love chaos. We love all this stuff. Nobody wants to see a driver's race get ruined because their team can't put their heads on straight. I mean, what are we talking about? This is just awful. And I'm sick and tired of it from these people that are getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to do exactly this. Your job is to literally strategize for the race. You are getting paid specifically to do that, and you're still doing it wrong. I need to stop this little mini rant going on here, but I'm just fed up with teams screwing over their drivers like this. And it's not just the teams that took the big gambles. It's Max Verstappen getting left out for an extra two laps and potentially costing him a chance to win because he loses so much time on slick tires. It's his teammate Liam Lawson getting left out an extra lap on hard tires and being completely unable to even keep the car on the track, ends up putting his rear wing into the wall. I mean, there are so many instances, not only in this race, but over the course of 2024, where strategy won or lost races. Max and Lewis Hamilton won races in Brazil and the UK, respectively, because of their strategies. And not even just their strategies, but the strategies of others who threw away any chance at a win. I'm looking at you, McLaren. So we need to acknowledge how important somebody's race strategy is to them getting points out of a weekend. That's a lot for one takeaway, but now my second takeaway of the weekend, Max Verstappen will always be there to challenge at the top. We saw what happened in Q3. We saw the 0.49 gap, and we saw Verstappen still get P2 in the race. No team was anywhere close to McLaren's pace, and Verstappen still converted P2 and was one back-end twitch away from winning the race entirely. Red Bull's car is crafted towards him, yes, but at some point, we just need to acknowledge that this is the best driver on the grid and one of the greatest drivers of all time. He is so talented, he is able to drive the cars to the absolute limit and sometimes take it over the limit of what anybody thought it was capable of doing. And I just don't think he gets enough recognition. I know a lot of people compliment him constantly for it, but he's so good at driving. And that's what won the championship last year. That's the only reason he has any chance at competing for it this year. I've said a lot today. It's been a pretty long episode, so I'm going to wrap this one up pretty quickly. Third key takeaway, the Norris and Piastri championship battle can be beautiful if McLaren gets out of their own way. Race one team orders is just wrong. I know the reasoning is pretty solid. You don't want Oscar to kill his tires in the dirty air of Lando, so that you have to pit an extra time. Man, it feels wrong to do that in the first race of the season. It feels like they haven't even given Oscar the chance to prove himself and prove that he can be a championship contender, and they're setting Lando up for success instantly. You have to give him the opportunity. You have to let these two fight. This could be your only to entertainment this year. You are sacrificing the minds of fans everywhere who just want to watch good racing. And instead, we're watching you tell them to hold position halfway through the first race of the season. McLaren has to let their drivers go at it. Papaya rules be darned. So that's it for my key takeaways, the final segment of this episode, race preview for China. So this is the first sprint weekend of the season. It also happens to be the F1 Academy season opener. I'm quite excited to see Nina Gaidman's full-time debut in the series. She debuted last season in a single race weekend and did very solid in both races, was screwed out of a race win by an unfortunate penalty. But I'm very excited to see what she can do in the Alpine seat in F1 Academy for her first full season. Be sure to tune into that. You can watch it for free on YouTube, I'm pretty sure. So check out some extra racing. Why not? Breaking down the 2024 race real quick. Max Verstappen won both the sprint and the Grand Prix that year. Lando Norris was also pretty solid here. He got pole in the sprint race before bottling the start, as per usual for him, and he ended up getting P2 in the actual Grand Prix. So expect some pretty solid results here from Lando if you weren't already. Clear skies are expected for the entire weekend, so this should be our first true showing of the hierarchy of cars this season on a dry track. Obviously, cars are semi-important in a wet track, but realistically, the driver is more important than the car in that situation. In a dry track, it's mostly car. So we really should see what tiers these cars are going to be in over the course of the season. My predictions for this weekend, I think Lando Norris will be the sprint winner. I think Lando Norris will take pole position. I think Lando Norris will win. And I think Oscar Piastri and Max Verstappen will join him on the podium. I don't think Ferrari will have fully recovered mentally from that disaster class in Australia, so I don't think they're going to be able to convert a podium. However, I would not be shocked to see them do it. Leclerc was quite successful here last year, got P4 behind Lando and the two Red Bulls. And Lewis looked pretty solid in the sprint, struggled a bit in the Grand Prix, but has had some success here in the past. So it should be a pretty interesting Grand Prix. And I'm very excited to see who's going to be fast and who's not going to be fast this season. And that should be our first true showing of it. So be sure to tune in next Sunday and be sure to check out another race recap after the race ends. It's going to be 3 in the morning here on the eastern seaboard of the United States where I live. So going to be quite an interesting time watching it that early in the morning. But I'll do my best to watch it. I'll have my impressions ready for you guys Sunday evening. And be sure to check out that episode when it comes out. Till then, I'll see you guys next time.